You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
A happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being here. Arkansas and Louisiana Tech, a few days away from kickoff, 3 o'clock Saturday over at Razorback Stadium. Razorbacks are 5-5, looking to get into bowl eligibility this weekend. Louisiana Tech, they could still get to a bowl. They're 4-6, but they would have to win out. And obviously beating an SEC team would be a tough task for them. Christina Long here with me. Later in our show, we'll hear from Colby Hill, the Arkansas soccer coach. The Razorbacks getting ready for their second round NCAA tournament game this weekend against Cal, over at Razorback Field. Pittsburgh was the team they played in the second round last year. Played Cal on Friday night at 6:30. Lots to get to. We'll talk about the new playoff rankings a little bit later. But first, Razorback football. You know, as I think about this game, I go back to the UAB game earlier this year. And, you know, I've heard coaches say this before, that, you know, you get 12 games a year, and out of those 12 games, you might get, like, maximum effort for two or three games. And then you get suitable effort for, you know, probably half for a majority of your games. And then there's going to be two or three games where you're going to have to, you know, you got to fight through some stuff to win. And this feels like it could be a game that falls into that latter category. And I go back to the UAB game. They lost to Oklahoma State the week before in a game that they felt like they could have and should have won. Now, I don't know that they felt like they should have beaten Texas, because Texas outplayed them. They could have beaten Texas. I mean, had they made some plays in the fourth quarter, they were right there ready to take that game away from the Longhorns last Saturday. And so I think there's going to be a lot of thinking back to the UAB game this week inside that building about, hey, don't you remember when you let the game the week before kind of affect you when you came out against UAB? Now, they were better than UAB. They were ready to, you know, they were able to overcome that slow start. But it is a game that is on my mind as they get ready for Louisiana Tech this week, because you know they're going to get Louisiana Tech's best shot. This is Louisiana Tech's biggest game on their schedule. It really is. And, you know, they're getting a chance to go into an SEC stadium and see if they can shock the world. And so can Arkansas match the intensity of Louisiana Tech? Can Arkansas have one of those 6-8 games when you've got suitable motivation for a game and try to avoid one of those two games where you don't have the motivation that you need and you really have to play at a level to overcome that? Because I think they've already shown us there are two or three games where they're going to have the high intensity level. It was when they played teams in orange. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma State, they had it. Tennessee, they had it. And I would say Texas, even in a loss, they had it. It would be surprising to see them be able to play with that type of motivation and energy and everything, enthusiasm that they had last week playing a team like Louisiana Tech on Saturday.
Right. When you come off a game like Texas that was disappointing but not, you know, a blowout, you know, they had a chance, like you said. You know, you get that kind of letdown. You get, you know, you expend all that effort, and then you don't actually get the big win. And then you have to make sure, you know, we talk about a hangover game all the time in sports at every level. And so you have to make sure that you didn't expend all of it and you're not looking ahead to, you know, the Missouri game. You know, you can't overlook it. And they all know that. They've all said that as we've talked to them this week. But how it actually manifests on a game day is different. And we've talked about it a little bit before. Louisiana Tech, they play pretty good defense. They really do. I think they have a lot of talent there, and they've limited team. You know, we talked yesterday about how their games have been low scoring. And so, you know, this is not one that they can afford to start slow the way they did against UAB.
Arkansas's got a little bit of a track record of not playing its best against some of these types of teams.
And at home.
Yes. I mean, Liberty beat them here 2 years ago, kind of the same situation. FIU, they got off to a really slow start, sluggish start last year. We mentioned the UAB game. Even the first game of the 21 season, a lot of people forget that they were behind 17-7 to Rice in the third quarter, and they came back and won. Petrino's team nearly beat them here in 22. At Missouri State, that was an FCS team. So there is a pattern there that probably gives you lower confidence in Arkansas's ability to be prepared to come out and maybe win this game by what the betting line says they will. It opened as a 23-point spread this week. You know, Louisiana Tech, they can play defense. They can play defense really well, at least at their level, in their conference. We mentioned this yesterday. A lot of games, they just won 12-7. They got a 9-3 game on their docket. I think they got a 14-10 game. A lot of games like that that are lower scoring. And so you wonder with a team that's as inefficient as Arkansas has been offensively, if Louisiana Tech's defense can travel. You wonder if that 23-point spread is going to be hard for Arkansas to cover. Sam Pittman spoke on the SEC coaches teleconference today, and he was asked about playing at home and just the pressure of playing at home and trying to play well. You know, Arkansas lost three straight at home, albeit against three pretty good opponents. LSU not looking quite so good anymore, but Ole Miss and Texas, obviously, the last couple of games. But this is what he had to say about trying to give the home fans a win in the final game in Fayetteville this year.
I think there's pressure every week, you know, to play good football. I still believe we have a really good football team, and if we play up to our standards, we can play with anybody in the country. So, you know, they're well aware of what happened at UAB, and we've got to play to a standard that's high for us, and hopefully it'll be good enough to win the game.
So that was Sam Pittman today. He also had some thoughts on NIL. It's kind of an interesting conversation with him about how does revenue share affect NIL moving forward. He said, not to make excuses, he said, but they've had basically half in NIL as some of the SEC teams that they're trying to compete against, and that revenue share will help at least, it will help in the evening of the playing field. It was kind of an interesting listen today on the teleconference.
Yeah, he said, I think his words were that they'll be able to compete, which the last 3 years they haven't, is what he said. So, you know, we've heard various people at the athletic department say that. We've heard Hunter Yurecek talk about that pretty expressly when he shouted out Ole Miss for their efforts and how much further ahead they were than Arkansas, and we saw that come to play on the field. It was interesting to hear him talk about that. He talked a little bit of like roster limit kind of stuff going forward with the House settlement, and you know, he is among the many coaches who are unsatisfied with the number that they've gotten because of what it'll do to the size of your roster and how it affects your ability to practice, and you know, because you will have so many fewer guys, how it might affect walk-on programs, things like that. So he talked about that quite a bit today as well.
And he gave an update on some injuries. He said Braylon Russell is going to be able to play on Saturday. Help me out with the others.
Selman Bridges, who was sick last week, he'll be back. He'll be available. And then he said Anthony Switzer is doubtful, which we don't get an availability report for this game because it's not an SEC game. So
that's about as close to an availability report as you're going to get this week for Arkansas and Louisiana Tech, because this is the last time that Pittman's speaking to reporters. After the game on Saturday, he will have his regular radio show out at the Catfish Hole tonight. Speaking of radio shows, John Calipari had his last night over at Sassy's off of Weddington. He had some interesting thoughts about his team so far. Talked about how they've got work to do in terms of offensive chemistry and holding on to leads. And here's some more from that, courtesy of Hogs Plus.
I got work to do. I do. I really like this team. The toughness, the defense, the shot blocking, that is a formula to do something special. It is. I've done this a long time. But you got to play with chemistry offensively. I don't think we have selfish players. I really don't. I think we've got to put them in situations where they're reading more what's happening. Now, one of the things that helps me coach is when you have a 16-point lead and you come down and take five ridiculous shots and then look up and it's eight. I mean, so again, when you get it to 16, you're trying to get it to 25 so the game is over.
It was John Calipari last night. It's evident, and I know he said this in the clip, but it really is evident when you just kind of listen to him that he does like this team. I don't think he's seen, and I know he hasn't seen the full potential of the team because he hadn't had a full team yet to coach with the injuries that they've been dealing with. I feel like the ceiling for Arkansas this year is a lot higher than anything that really we've seen through four games.
Yeah, I mean, it's through four games is really what I keep coming back to is, you know, there are concerns about chemistry and things like that. And this is a whole new team that's played four games. And so I think, you know, there will come a point where you kind of say, if we don't see it now, when are we going to see it? And we, you know, that was the case with some of Eric Musselman's teams over the last few years. They would start slow. And so maybe that's something, you know, we might reach that point. We might not. And like you said, the injury problems are there. Having kind of the shorter bench is there. I mean, he only has about 9 guys. And then when you've got 2 of them out, like they did the other night, you're playing with 7 guys. That's a problem. And if that's something that starts to happen during SEC play, that might be an issue. So there are things to think about, but I don't think it's time to freak out or make big judgments about this team.
Now, he did talk about attendance again, and he kind of, I don't know even what you'd say. He said, I understand that it's hard to come to all the preseason games. And I'm not going to play this clip, Blake. If you'd pull up the picture, though, you know, Kentucky played Lipscomb last night at Rupp Arena. And they beat them by 29. I watched some of that game. They were up by 40-something in the second half. I mean, it was a total beatdown. But, you know, I've told people that I think to understand where Calipari's coming from on this attendance thing, you kind of have to understand where he has been. So this was last night's game against Lipscomb for Kentucky. This is Rupp Arena. If you're not watching the podcast, you can just maybe kind of visualize this. It's full. And it's there may be some empty seats in there, sure. This is a pregame shot, though, and you can't see very many empty seats in there, and it's impressive. This is how a blue-blood basketball program shows up for these types of games. I was watching KU play last night against UNC Wilmington, and Fog Allen was full. You know, Duke played a game recently against, who was it, Winthrop or Elon? I can't remember, but a team like that, and it was full, and so this is where Calipari's coming from. He came from this type of thinking where the fans, they show up whenever, you know, they turn on the lights in the arena.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you're used to, I'd be curious if there is any sort of different approach to pricing, marketing, how they kind of get those filled, or if it is quite simply just because of the status of those programs. And that's, you know, that's what they're trying to build here. You know, they want to get there. I think I'm not totally surprised that it's not like that from day one. But I think maybe Calipari is. I don't know if he expected this or not. But yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right. When this is what you're coming from, you know, it's what you've gotten used to.
It's not a one-way street. When you're trying to build a program that's Arkansas, the fans, you don't go out and hire Calipari if you don't think that Arkansas can compete with the Kentuckys and the Kansas and the North Carolinas and the Dukes and so on. And, you know, one of the ways you do that is you fill up your arena. Now, Arkansas got a big old arena to fill up, but Kentucky does too. And, you know, so it's like I said, it's not a one-way street. You go out, you hire Calipari. Great. You made the financial commitment to do that. You go out and you get the type of recruits that it feels like it's going to take to, you know, win championship or at least, you know, at least to field championship level teams. Great. I think they've taken a step toward doing that now. You got to act like a blue blood fan base, though, if you want to be one. And I feel like part of that is you got to show up. You got to show up. You got to fill your seats. I mean, you have to come to the game, find somebody else to come for you. But when you hear Calipari making comments about this 2 times in 3 games, and then again on his coach's show last night, it tells you that it's something that is meaningful to him. And it's something, I don't know if you'd say it's bothering him, but it's certainly something that's on his mind.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's been disappointing from his standpoint, given what he came from. But
and he
yeah.
said it's, you know, he didn't say it was disappointing for the players. Yeah, but the players, they want to play in front of that type of atmosphere. Yeah.
And fans want to be in that type of atmosphere. And I think maybe there's an expectation when you look at, okay, I'm pulling up the basketball schedule. Let me see what games I want to go to. Mm-hmm. You might not look at, you know, some of these opponents and think, because it hasn't been this way, you might not think, okay, that's going to be a fun game to go to. When you go to a KU game or a UK game, you know it's going to be packed. And you know you're going to have a really cool college basketball experience, no matter who they're playing. Arkansas hasn't had that over, you know, recent years. It's not like they were packing the house for these kinds of non-conference games under Musselman. So you don't necessarily, you know, a fan doesn't necessarily look at such and such game against a random team they've never heard of and go, well, but it's a great, you know, it'll be really fun to be there anyway. It's, oh, I don't know who that is. They're probably going to win. I don't really want to go.
And I've heard people say, hey, if you want to fill up the house, schedule better opponents. Have you seen who Kentucky's played so far? They played Wright State, they played Bucknell, and they played Lipscomb at home. Their next game at home is Jackson State. Okay, I mean, is that any better than, I mean, we got a common opponent there, Lipscomb, but is that any better than Lipscomb and Troy and Pacific? I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so either. Their best, Arkansas's best non-conference games, and I don't think this is an Arkansas-specific thing, are neutral sites or road games.
And when, you know, and one of the other things Calipari said on his radio show last night was when recruits are watching this, they notice when there's empty seats. It's hard not to notice. So, again, if you want to be a blue blood program, start acting like a blue blood program. Fill up the seats. I don't think it's that hard. If you don't want your tickets, find somebody who will take your tickets. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm totally off base on this.
One thing I saw, a user on our message board had shared a thread from Twitter from, I can't remember who it was, but it was a woman who was talking about how it is, she was saying that she was frustrated by people saying just get rid of your tickets because of how much season ticket holders in particular spend on these tickets, mm-hmm. that it doesn't always make sense for them to just give them away. And you mentioned, list them, resell them.
I get that.
But resale requires people to want to buy them. And if people aren't going to the resale, you know, I think the resale market is being flooded with requests for the Lipscomb game.
I wonder how many people realize that there are tickets available because you hear in the summertime, hey, it's sold out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, and maybe that's naive of me to say that, but I wonder if there are people out there who think, hey, I'm never going to be able to go to the game because it's sold out.
Yeah. And resale, some people will, you know, there are always, you know, bots or scalpers or whatever that buy all the tickets and resell them for crazy prices. But you can get people, you'll get people that are just not using their tickets
you'll get
and
some.
Sell them for face value.
You'll get some.
But it is harder to, it is a tougher ask to say, oh, just go on SeatGeek and buy them. And it's, you're probably going to pay way more than what they're worth.
The ticket resale market is kind of like the used car resale market, you know, where like, 15 years ago, you could get a car and you'd go to somebody, hey, you know, give me $10,000 OBO, you know, and just take it off my hands. Mm-hmm. And now it's like $45,000. I know what I got.
Cash you
know,
only.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, so I feel like the ticket resale market is kind of like that too. Hey, I paid this for these tickets. And not only did I pay for the tickets that are this price, but I'm going to prorate my foundation donation in there, you know, there, and I want $85 out of this ticket, this one ticket for Lipscomb, because that's really what it costs me.
And honestly, I don't really blame them because getting tickets for these things are so expensive.
But they're not going to get that for these
types of games. That's the problem, and that's how you end up with the problem.
And so then, you know, it's like, how do we get past this impasse?
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly.
So, yeah.
I'm curious if it's any different.
But again,
I
come back to, if you want to be a blue blood program, you have to act like one.
Yeah.
And this is a very easy way to act like a blue blood program. Kentucky, they back it up, man. Kansas, they back it up. Duke, and Kentucky's a bigger arena than Bud Walton. Say that too. It's a bigger arena than Bud Walton Arena, and I don't know that Lexington's any bigger than Northwest Arkansas, is it?
I don't know off the top of my head. I was born there.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Isn't that weird?
Learn
I've like
new every
I've
day.
Been back like one time since being born there, basically.
Okay. Oh, there we go. We know that. Hey, how about that? You've thrown me off now. Stephen Jones had some comments yesterday. He's obviously Jerry Jones' son, in management with the Dallas Cowboys. I couldn't tell you what his exact title is, but obviously, you know, he's right there at the very top of the Cowboys food chain. He was on. He has a Monday. I say this was yesterday. This was on Monday. He has a Monday radio appearance on the Ticket. Of course, Jerry Jones has an appearance on the Ticket too, and we heard how that went earlier this year. Stevens wasn't real controversial, but it was kind of interesting. They got toward the end of his interview, and they asked him about the Arkansas-Texas rivalry. And then the conversation kind of evolved into conversation about NIL. Obviously, this is a Dallas-based radio station. A ton of UT and UA fans would be tuned in and listening to this. Stephen Jones, he played for the Razorbacks in the late 80s. Obviously, his son, John Stephen, came here and played as well. You know, the Jones family, they've been very generous to the Razorbacks throughout the years. You got a facility that's named for him on campus, but this was interesting, his comments that he made, and here's what they said. This is audio from DallasCowboys.com.
I think historically Arkansas has always felt like Texas was one of their biggest rivalries. I don't know that, sometimes you feel like Texas certainly had some other ones, including obviously OU and A&M. But we've always looked forward to playing Texas. It's a huge deal for the people of Arkansas. It was a huge deal there Saturday in terms of the Longhorns coming in there. You could certainly feel the atmosphere. I didn't actually get to attend the game, but Jerry did, and a couple of others in our family did, and just said the atmosphere was amazing. And but hats off to the Longhorns. They got it done. We, I think, had some opportunities late and some momentum, but didn't quite work out for my Hogs this time. But I've got a lot of family members, including three of my daughters who are Longhorns, and so we've got a little split family going on here. But hats off to the Longhorns, and wish them nothing but the best as they move forward and have a shot to pursue a national championship.
Have y'all ever thought about tipping the scales on that rivalry and pumping all the NIL money into Arkansas and really just making this a no contest?
Well, we've got our own payroll, as you know, that keeps us busy. And I don't know that we need to add an NIL to it. The other thing is the NFL certainly has rules on the football side of things that really keep a finger on what an NFL owner can do in terms of NIL, which, of course, as you know, would make sense.
That does make sense,
come
yeah.
From college to the NFL, they keep a close eye on that, and it's really difficult to get involved in that aspect of it as an NFL owner.
So that was Stephen Jones on the ticket down in Dallas. Very interesting comments, because I think there are a lot of people out there. And again, this relates to NIL only. This doesn't mean the Jones family can't give to the Razorback Foundation, which I think, I know they do. They gave that big lot of land out south of town that was valued at several million dollars 8, 9, 10 years ago. But this is interesting to me, because there aren't a whole lot of families I can imagine that are Razorback supporters who have more financial means than Jerry Jones and his children. And they can't contribute to NIL. It's a very interesting revelation to me that I don't know that I'd really ever thought a whole lot about.
Yeah, this had never crossed my mind, which surprised me. But whenever you do hear from people that are talking about, some of the wealthy, the typical big splash donors that you see from Arkansas, the Joneses, and they're talking about why don't they give more to NIL. The Joneses actually, I feel like in the talk I've seen among fans, the Joneses actually don't come up that often. They're talking about the Waltons, they're talking about the Hunts, they're talking about families like that. Other, the Tysons. And I actually feel like the Joneses haven't been thrown in there that often. And it makes sense. Maybe everyone but us was aware that they,
maybe people just assume that it's happening.
Yeah, maybe so.
Because they're everywhere at Razorback mm-hmm. football. Jerry Jones was on the field Saturday mm-hmm. With the 1964 championship.
The Student Athlete
team.
Success Center has Jerry yeah. and Gene's name on it. They're all over the place.
I mean, when John Stephen was playing here, you saw them at every single game, home and away.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting because they don't usually come up. And yeah, so I'd never really thought about it. Does the Walton that owns the Broncos?
Okay.
Which I can't remember which one it is. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
That's another NFL owner situation. Yeah. I don't know that he or that family would be particularly, I don't know what their specific donor situation is with Arkansas, but that's another one where it could come up. But yeah, it is kind of a unique situation with that NFL owner to college tie. And I haven't seen that come up among other fan bases either.
It's just very interesting. It's something I have not given any thought to. And I got to quit calling it NIL. Okay. I keep saying I'm going to call it P for P. I'm going to call it what it is. It's play for play. It's pay for play. There's no doubt about it. And I'm interested in talking to Kyle May at our luncheon tomorrow and just kind of, really probing him on some of these NIL questions, because I got a lot of them.
There's always a lot. And every time, I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on it. And then as soon as I feel like I've got a good grasp, all the rules change again and everything is blown out. And you got to relearn the whole system.
We mentioned what Pittman was saying about revenue share and NIL a little bit earlier. I keep coming back to, in the old way of doing things, 85 scholarships leveled the playing field. Now, were there people passing money along in brown paper sacks? Certainly there were. And there were teams that were bending the rules and outright breaking them. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But the field for the people, you know, for the, you know, the vast majority, I think, of teams were playing by the rules. Maybe I'm naive, but I think that the most of them were. And if you ever want to get back to any semblance of that, you've got to bust up the collectives. And the collectives, I think that there was an initial thought with this house settlement that the collectives were going to go away, or at least they were going to be significantly reined in. I don't know that that's the case now.
I don't see how it can be, because I think what's going to happen is you're still going to have the teams at the top are still going to look for ways to be at the top. You know, the Georgias, Alabamas, yeah. whoever's are not going to be satisfied with, okay, everyone has the same salary cap now. They are going to, the collectives are then going to come in on top of that and say, okay, quarterback, we can give you this yep. much in revenue share, yep. and yep. our collective can give yep. you more than all the other SEC collectives.
Absolutely.
And this is how much they'll do. It's still going to be there. I think there has been an idea that, okay, rev share is going to solve the NIL problem. It's going to solve the collective problem. And I don't think that it is at all.
It will. I feel like it'll put most of the SEC and Big Ten teams, like, it'll kick them up a notch. Maybe, you know, if you've got an Arkansas recruiting against an Oklahoma State, but if you're recruiting against your peers,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that it changes any, yeah. because it doesn't change the fact, as Pittman said, that Arkansas has half of the NIL available that some of the teams that they're competing against for recruits have.
Yeah.
I don't think that changes that.
Yeah. I'll be interested if how much it cleans up the contract idea and how much simpler that gets yeah. once you have revenue share, and, you know, how, you know, will we see schools sort of build, you know, the way that coaches contracts, media mm-hmm. appearances, things like that are built into those contracts as part of, you know, how you earn that compensation. Will that be built into player thing? You know, will they have certain number of media appearances they need to do, things like that, as representatives of the university, and how that will work?
You know, we talk about the Cowboys. The Cowboys are the most valuable franchise in the world. And in the NFL, you've got a signing cap, or you've got a salary cap for NFL teams. But, you know, you can do things to get creative to work around the salary cap. You can sign Dak Prescott for X amount per year, but then give him a huge signing bonus because you sell so much merchandise and you sell your tickets and you've got all of this value. You know, that maybe another NFL team, maybe it would be more difficult for them to do. But the NFL, I love the model of the salary cap and how it keeps teams competitive with each other. And you think about that relative to what you see in Major League Baseball, where the Mets and the Yankees and the Dodgers and another team or two are spending so much more than the teams that are down at the very bottom, who really have no chance to, you know, really ever be that competitive with them. Unless the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Mets just totally hate each other's guts and they don't want to play for each other. You know what I mean? And so that's where college football is right now. It's like Major League Baseball, where if you've got a big population base and you've got a big alumni base and you've got resources financially, you can stay at the top and you're never going to fall from the top. And then you got teams that are small market teams, like in Arkansas, who are doing everything they can to get up there, but they just don't have the resources to get up there. And I hate that. I hate that about Major League Baseball. I love the NFL model. And it feels like revenue share has the potential to be like a salary cap to a degree. You know, this isn't just a football thing. You're sharing it with basketball players and baseball players and everything else too. But it's got the potential to maybe have that salary cap type feel if you will go out and bust up the collectives. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I just don't know that it changes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't envy anybody that works in athletics right now or in finances for these athletic departments, because it is going to be such a mess.
We want to tell you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport. Unique stories on all of your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Speaking of subscribing, hope you'll subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or the video version on YouTube. Just search Whole Hog Sports on any of those platforms, and you will find our latest podcast. When we come back, Colby Hale, the soccer coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks, will join us to talk about his team and their second-round NCAA tournament game this weekend. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. The Arkansas soccer team opened NCAA tournament play last Friday with a 4-0 victory over Oklahoma State out at Razorback Field. They'll be back at home this weekend. A second-round game against Cal on Friday night at 6:30. Colby Hale is the coach of the Razorbacks, and he joins us now. Colby, appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Hey, so you guys just got done with a pretty cold workout, I suppose. What's it like? You know, because soccer starts, you start in the dead of summer. I mean, it's hot, some of the workouts that you guys go through. And then, I mean, this is kind of the point you want. You want to be in those really cold workouts. I just wonder, what's this week of preparation been like for Cal?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you're just fine-tuning stuff, right? Like, you're a little bit who you are. Certainly, you can get better at some things. So we're kind of working on some details. But it's funny, when the weather cools, it just feels like postseason. Mm. And, you know, when it's warm, it's warm. And then that first cool day just feels a little different, right? It's like, okay, postseason is here. So, yeah, it was good today. Just kind of working on some things. Mostly us still. We'll probably work a little on Cal tomorrow.
Oklahoma State, you beat them 4-0, like I mentioned. I mean, you hit them with three really quick goals. Were you happy with how your team started out that game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you come in, when you play at Arkansas, it's got an emotional and a physical, like, a you have to weather this. Our fans are good. It's a different environment. It feels different. There's an energy to it that you have to control. And if you can't, it can snowball on you pretty quickly. So I thought we did a good job of setting the tempo early, scored some goals. And I thought, Oklahoma State had a difficult time recovering from that.
I was talking to Anthony after the game, Anthony Christensen, who covers your team real well for us. And he said he thought you guys won the midfield battle in that game and that he thought that was the key to the game. Just kind of explain that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when they have five in midfield and you have four, if you can win that, I mean, we were 3v3 against their backs. And our backs had a man up in the back. So we felt like if we could win the midfield battle in terms of transition, first, second balls in possession, you're gonna control the game. So we did a good job there. We played a bunch of different players in there, which I thought was good. But, you know, our outside mids have to get into attacking positions so they can get some service.
Oklahoma State had an RPI of number 31. And, I mean, for being a two-seed in the tournament, it was a little bit surprising to see them in your bracket on one hand. And then on the other hand, you know what the NCAA does. They try to keep teams fairly close geographically. To have an opponent that good in the first round, were you surprised at all, and were you pleased with how your team reacted to it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think our team's built for that, right? Like, we don't really get into all that nonsense, so we don't control it, so we don't spend much time thinking about it. Now, I do think the NCAA should probably change their mantra to, like, we care until it costs us money, and then we don't care at all. I think it's a disservice. I think the NCAA needs to get their crap together, right? Like, they're, if you're going to say the student athlete experience matters, then make it matter, even at the extent of cost, right? So that being said, like, we didn't spend 1 second worried about it. I mean, we knew whoever you're playing at this time of the year is going to be good. You're in the NCAA tournament. So we didn't really, you know, bother ourselves with, oh, did we get a good draw? Did we not? Like, you just tell us who to play and we're going
to
play them.
But to the extent that you played a really good opponent in the first round, because, you know, sometimes you played teams who you were way better than and you beat them by a lot in the first round. Does it help prepare your team for the second round matchup?
We said that. Yeah, we said, you know, if you're playing a team and you're going to shoot them 34-0, you don't really have to be sharp. There's some bad habits kind of creep in. And we knew Oklahoma State is certainly good enough. If you don't play well, they can beat you, right? They play, some really good teams. So, yeah, that's one of the things we said. Like, hey, everything has an advantage and probably a disadvantage, two sides of the coin. You're spot on, Matt. Like we said, hey, this is going to keep us sharp going into another weekend if we can win.
I've been real impressed this year with the play of Ava Tankersley. How much has she meant to your team?
I mean, she's a pro. Like, it's not just how good she is on the field. It's who she is as a person, you know, how she, you know, eats and sleeps and recovers. And like, she acts like a pro. And I think everyone on the team would kind of look to her as like, okay, this is how you do things on and off the field.
And I've been impressed too with your a couple of your freshmen in particular, Keegan Smith and goal, Anaya Robinson, who scored one of your goals the other night. Just what have they meant to the team? And are you at a point, you know, you hear coaches say sometimes that they're not freshmen anymore at this point in the year. Is that true, or are they've never experienced NCAA postseason? Is there still maybe some freshman tendencies in there?
Well, yeah, and you got Jalen Brownlee, who I think, yeah, you know, led the, yeah, team maybe in minutes at one point of the season. So, yeah, I mean, for me, we don't anoint them. Like, some people are like, oh, we're going to start two or three or four freshmen next year. And I'm like, how do you know? All they've done is played against other 16 and 17-year-olds, right, until they get here and do it. But in our program, we don't really talk about age. Like, it's not a – you're not starting because you're old. You're not getting a starting spot because you beat the U17 pretty blue kitties. Like, none of that really matters for us. It's way more about, hey, you got here, how do we win games? So yeah, to answer your question, like, I don't really think of them as freshmen. You know, if they play well or whatever, like, they're soccer players for us. It's a meritocracy. You're going to earn what you get. But yeah, they've been bit. And it's not just them, man. It's the transfers. I mean, we lost a lot last year. You lost Anna Pottingill and B. Franklin. Mm-hmm. Some would say two of the best, you know, three, four, five players in the history of the program. Morgan White had 10 goals, two of our three backs, both goalkeepers. But, you know, it's like, yeah, we got some transfers are good. Some of the freshmen stepped up. Some kids got better. Like, it's just how we don't want to have a good season. We're not like trying to, hey, let's all the stars align that we had a good year. It's like someone made a comment to me like, oh, you know, you lost in the second round last year. It's like, I know, but we want to be in the mix every year. We won the league. This year we didn't win the league. 2 years ago, we didn't win the league and went to an Elite Eight. So for us, it's like, what's the game in front of us? How do we try to win that one?
I know you said you're going to, you know, spend more time on Cal with your team tomorrow, but how much have you done just in terms of scouting them? And I wanted to ask you, too, about they've got a player, Carly Lima, who's scored 16 goals, has three assists, looks like a pretty good offensive player for them. You know, what have you seen from her in scouting that makes her so good?
Yeah, she's legit. I mean, it's not just her, man. They got four, five, six forwards up front who can flat out play and fly. So, I mean, at this time of the year, there's 32 teams left playing, right? Like, we kind of said that to our team today. There's 360, 330 of them are sitting at home watching games and working on their homework. Like, for us, this is 32 teams. If you're playing someone, they're going to be stinking good. So she was the ACC player of the year. She's very good. Pacey can finish. You know, obviously we'll have to be at our best. But then on the other side of the thing, like, they have to defend our forwards too, right? So I'm sure they're saying the same thing. You know, Neil's getting asked the same question, like, what are you going to do with Ava Tankersley and Anaya Robinson and, you know, Kate Doyle and all those. So, yeah, it should be a great game. And I like the matchup. It's a new team. We've not played them since I've been here. So I'm excited.
I think you had about 2,500 out at the field the other night when you beat Oklahoma State. I was looking at attendances the other day. I think you're top 10 nationally in attendance. And your team's been so good at home. What's it mean to have home games, and what's the atmosphere like? Maybe if you were explaining to someone who hasn't been there.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the atmosphere is electric. When you walk in, you can feel it, and it gets to some other teams. It really does. I mean, I think college coaches would put this as one of the hardest 1, 2, maybe 3 teams in America to play. Now, that being said, like, Cal's a good team. They play lots of good opponents. So we'll get their absolute best effort. We know we will. And it's going to take one of our best efforts to have a chance to win the game.
You're in the middle of a national signing period right now for the 2025 class, or maybe it just wrapped up. But, you know, and it's not just soccer. It's a lot of sports. You're recruiting on what you think might happen next year. There's this house settlement, and it's preliminary. It won't be formally approved until at least April. How weird of a recruiting cycle has this been when you just don't really know that you know what's coming down the pike?
Yeah, and this was the class that signed up to something that it changed after they signed. Mm-hmm. You know, the 26th, the 27th, we kind of knew, hey, I think this is coming. But this was a class that didn't sign up for this. So yeah, it's taken some honest conversations. You know, we believe in transparency, honesty, openness, like everyone says it, but we legit just called everyone in the class and said, okay, here's what we think's coming down the pipe. Here's when we'll know some answers. Let's have some real conversations here. So yeah, and some of those players had to make tough decisions for themselves. You know, some chose the unknown. So, you know, for us, like, we just want to make sure that they have all the information. and that we can you know, continue moving forward with our classes.
You know, between the transfer rules that have changed, obviously you've got NIL that's a component in every sport now. What we were just talking about, the House settlement. How important has adaptability been as a coach just to stay successful for the last few years?
No, you're spot on. I mean, we say excuses for losers. Don't be a loser. I mean, there's going to be things that change outside of our control, not just the House, but lots of things, right? And for us, it's like, okay, we cannot, you know, spend all of our time thinking about things that we don't control. Like, this has to be like, okay, here's a new challenge. Here's a new set of rules. You know, we used to use this analogy of like, Matt, when you were young and you would go out front and you would play football with your friends in the front yard, the first thing you have to do is decide the rules, right? Is it, what's a first down? Is it two completions? Is it a light post? Is it make it, take it? Are you throwing the ball for kickoffs? Like, is it two-hand touch? Is it one? Is it, well, as the rules change, it's two-hand touch above the waist. Well, now it's one-hand touch anywhere. Or now it's tackle or whatever. And so our job is just to adapt to the rules that are put into place and say, okay, how do we continue to win the game? And our recruiting model won't change really that much, but a little bit, right? Because now we have a hard cap. Like, we have to ask questions like, how many goalkeepers do you keep? How many do you have in a class? How do you save rooms for transfers? Like, and, you know, we're not stupid. So we're trying to, but we're also never had this before, right? So I think it would take everyone probably maybe a year or two to really kind of what I would say this. And there's no telling. I mean, they're going to get sued again, right? Like, they're just going to keep getting sued and changing the rules about every 3 months. So for us, it's like, just, yeah, stay flexible, stay adaptable. How do we, you know, make sure that we're continuing moving forward and that are the rules they give us?
I think you guys have been pretty adaptable. You've had a lot of success here the last few years. So congratulations on that. And, hey, good luck to you on Friday night.
Matt, I appreciate it, man. Thanks
for having
me.
Appreciate it. Colby Hale, the Arkansas soccer coach. When we come back, Christina Long will be in studio with me again, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. The new college football playoff rankings came out, and Christina and I took a stab at this yesterday. And I almost got it right. The only one I missed, at least from a seeding standpoint, was I had Colorado at 12, and the playoff committee put BYU at 12. I was a little surprised by that. Maybe shouldn't be too surprised by it because BYU's got one loss and Colorado's got two. I think eventually Colorado is going to be the Big 12 champion over BYU. BYU's got a tough game this week, by the way, against Arizona State.
Yeah.
In Tempe, an Arizona State team who's suddenly gotten pretty hot. Seems like Colorado's in the driver's seat. We'll see. You know, anything can happen in a conference championship, one-off type experience. But not a whole lot of surprise from my seat. And I think Blake's got the bracket pulled up here, what the provisional bracket would look like. Not a whole lot of surprise from my seat how this looks right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a little surprised at how they continue to rate Notre Dame so high. I had them, I can't remember where I put them, which I did my projections based on how I think the rest of the regular season and conference championships will play out. But I think I had them down 10, 11, or 12.
See, but I don't think Notre Dame's going to lose this year. They play Army and they play USC, and that's
it. I mean,
I think
they lost
both.
Northern Illinois. I just think that loss is really bad. And then I think their best win is Texas A&M, which is a good win, but they don't have a lot of others that are super close to that I can think of. So I guess I'm not surprised Notre Dame is in there. I definitely think they should be. I just am surprised that they're as high as six. And then, yeah, they knocked BYU down to 14, which doesn't surprise me a ton. I don't think they had a ton of belief in BYU to begin with. And like you said, Arizona State, I don't feel like enough people are talking about Arizona State, myself included. You know, when I was doing research for our brackets, I was like, oh, you can't count them out of the Big 12 right now to either. So, you know, that's going to be something to watch for sure.
I know that their coach is psycho, Arizona State. I couldn't tell you his name. I just know, because I burned the candle at both ends. And so there was a Friday night this year where I was up. I had been doing a Fayetteville game. I was trying to wind down. And Arizona State was playing somebody. And their coach had, like, the psycho moment of the year as the people were, like, they were running onto the field. They were celebrating. And, I mean, he was going nuts.
Yeah. Kenny Dillingham. Not to be confused with Utah's Kyle Whittingham.
No. Who would do that? You know what? I don't know that there's a great – you were talking about Notre Dame. I don't know that there's a great team in college football this year. I mean, is there a great team in college football? Oregon's won all their games. Mm-hmm. But that Ohio State game could have gone either way. So maybe Oregon and Ohio State are these great teams that are far and away better than everybody else. Texas, I mean, I don't see greatness from Texas. I see a really solid football team. I don't see greatness. You know, you look down the list, Penn State, no. Mm-hmm. Indiana, maybe. You know, we'll see this weekend.
Yeah.
Ohio State's got two of their starting offensive linemen out.
Oh.
Their starting center tore his Achilles in practice yesterday.
Wow.
And one of the strengths of Indiana's football team is its defensive front. I'm hearing a lot of people who are taking Indiana right now to beat Ohio State this weekend in the horseshoe because they think that Indiana's defensive front's going to hold up really nicely against this Ohio State offensive line that hasn't been quite so good. But back to my original point, I just don't see a great team, maybe minus Oregon, we'll see with them, in college football this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think usually when we see those teams, a lot of times it's, you know, there's teams in the Big Ten and then there's a couple of teams out of the SEC that are looking like those kinds of great teams. And I think the reason we've seen the SEC look the way that it does this year and the kind of results we've gotten is because of that, is because there's not, you know, we've talked about how there doesn't seem to be that consensus dominant guy at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I heard somebody that was talking the other day about how there doesn't seem to be the consensus dominant guy at receiver. It seems like the SEC usually every year has that big name receiver, and they've got a lot of really talented guys. And, you know, I think Ryan Williams from Alabama is going to become that guy. He had those moments early in the year, but there doesn't seem to be, you know, Ohio State has the guys like that, you know? So I think this is definitely an odd year in terms of, you know, we've talked about it a lot with the results we've seen and the kind of upsets. And if you want to say parody or whatever it is, we've seen that a lot, but we haven't seen it as, like you said, with a one team that just feels like they are the team and they are the team that's going to pull it off.
I think there's a lot of strong teams. I don't know that there's a great team this year. Maybe there is, and maybe somebody really establishes themselves here over the last, you know, 5-6 games of the year when you take conference championships and the playoff into consideration. I just don't know that I see a great team right now. Speaking of Oregon, did you see where they're going to the Big Ten championship game, but they didn't know it until 3 days after they had actually clinched their berth?
Yeah, because of how insane tiebreakers and just it's hard to know when something is actually set and locked in. Yeah. That was pretty crazy.
Hopefully the SEC has their act together better than the Big Ten did, because if the SEC operated on a similar timeline as the Big Ten just operated to say, hey, Oregon, you're in, like whoever's number two, Alabama, Georgia, whatever, they wouldn't know they're going to Atlanta until like Tuesday before Saturday game.
Yeah. Well, I know we were talking yesterday about, you know, we were talking about my pick for the SEC championship game and how I thought it was going to be Alabama versus Texas and Alabama would have a chance. Alabama is kind of in the spot right now to where they would get in with the tiebreakers because it has to do with the winning percentage of your opponents, of your SEC opponents. And I believe as it stands right now, Alabama wins that tiebreaker. That could change over the rest of, you know, we've got two games left, but.
Okay, that's a good segue into this clip from Lane Kiffin. He was, you know, Kiffin, I give him a lot of credit because he is the coach who's not afraid to go out there and say what's really on everybody's mind. And what's on a lot of these coaches' mind right now is, if we go to the SEC championship game and we've got two losses, does that not put us in a disadvantage to the other two lost teams in terms of making the playoff? Now, you could win the SEC championship and you get an automatic berth and you know, there's no skin off your back. But if you lose that game, who's to say a three-loss Ole Miss team would go in over a two-loss Georgia team who they beat on the field. It's very interesting. This is what Kiffin had to say about it this week.
You know, it's changed. The conference championship, could have a big impact both ways for people. So I've talked to other coaches, so I'll just kind of give you the feeling from some other coaches that, you know, they don't want to be in it. And, you know, the risk to get a bye, the reward to get a bye versus the risk to get knocked out completely. I mean, that's a really big risk, just to get a bye. So, I think it's ended up being a very unique situation of all, you know, postseason sports, the way that system's set up there and how you could go to that and get knocked out. And if you don't go, you're in.
So he makes a lot of great points.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't thought about it, but he's absolutely right.
I was listening to somebody yesterday. It might have been Paul Feinbaum, because I was listening to an ESPN segment about this. And I think what he said, and I tend to agree a lot with what he said, was that the conference championship games have outlived their usefulness in the expanded playoff era.
Yeah, I think I'm interested in him in walking that idea out, because, I mean, the immediate thought is, but you have the auto bids and the high seat, the automatic host spot for the top four conference champions.
But you could get that if you didn't have a conference championship game.
Yeah, if you didn't play the actual game. Yeah.
It would also, I think it would help too on two fronts, and some stuff that we've talked to about, you know, in the not too recent past. Number one is that it could potentially level the playing field from a scheduling standpoint. You know, it's like the Big Ten and the Big 12 right now, they play 9 conference games, but mm-hmm. the SEC and the ACC only play 8. Let's say you take away all the conference championship games and you add a 9th conference game in there. That would be, I feel like it would be satisfying to the TV partners who, you know, part of the deals that they pay for are the conference championship games. The conference championship games are very, very, very valuable. But are they more valuable as a standalone entity than, say, you know, a weekend full of 8 conference games at the end of the year where, you know, depending on what happens here and here and here, like people would tune in to watch that too. And I think they might tune in to watch that maybe more than they would a conference championship game, especially if it's something, like a lopsided conference championship. And you get those sometimes. Big 12 last year, what, Texas beat Oklahoma State 42-7?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've seen our share of SEC championship games that weren't competitive. So it'll be interesting to see how this is handled moving forward. It makes you understand why Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, why they want a guaranteed number of teams that are going to make it every year. Because then if that's the case, then they know that, hey, if we send Ole Miss to the SEC championship game and they lose, there's still going to be some protection there for them, and they're going to get into the playoff. As opposed to the way that it's set up right now, there may not be that protection. Now, if Ole Miss gets knocked out, it might be Tennessee or A&M or a team like that that's taking their place. He makes a lot of valuable points, a lot of valid points.
Yeah. I mean, I think the SEC, when it comes to this kind of thing, is motivated by two things, and it's getting playoff spots and money, and because getting playoff spots gets you money. And I think that if there is something, you know, if they can look into it and find that there is a way for them to eliminate conference championship games that gives them a better chance at more playoff spots and that will not decrease their TV ratings and therefore money and the value of their games on TV, then they would absolutely push to do that. They're always going to choose to do what's going to get them, what's going to maximize those two things.
It's always bothered me, and maybe it shouldn't because this is what the playoff ultimately is, but it's always bothered me that conferences, and you sort of see this with the playoff now in football, but like in other sports, how they always tie their automatic bid to something that happens in one event, like mm-hmm. one weekend. So, you know, you could be Mississippi State was the best soccer team all year, and then they go to Pensacola and they lose in the semifinal, and they don't get the automatic bid to the tournament. Now, that didn't hurt them. They're still a number one seed in the tournament, and they're fine. But, like, imagine if that happened to Arkansas State. They're not going to the tournament. Mm-hmm. Sunbelt's not getting 2 bids. And this happens in baseball. This happens in basketball. This happens in every sport where you have teams, you know, like a basketball team who's 31-2, but because they lost to a team that was 14-18 who just got hot one weekend in March, they don't get to go to the NCAA tournament, and it waters down the NCAA tournament. It's always bothered me how conferences, they attach their automatic bids to these tournaments, and now they're doing it in a way to the conference championship games. And I think it dulls a little bit the regular season. Now, you still got to have a really good regular season to put yourself in position to be there in the conference championship game. So it's not quite like a tournament setting for some of the other sports. You know, they always talk about, we want to make the college football regular season mean something. Well, this is a way you can make it mean something.
Yeah.
If you reward the team who really was the best, let's say Texas wins out, and they go to the SEC championship game, and they get curb stomped by a two-loss, you know, whoever. Is that team really the best team in the SEC for the season? No, they're just the best team that weekend. So, I don't know. I would be okay with the conference championships going away.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would too. I think if it got us better games in the playoff, then I would be fine with that.
Yeah, and I mean, and what you run the risk of here, and not only do you run the risk of some teams that are maybe more deserving getting left out, you also run the risk of, let's say, just pure chaos happens in the Big 12 over the next couple of weeks, and a three-loss team gets in, and they get on Saturday, and they go to the play. Did they really deserve to be in the playoff? Not in my book. You know, they're not more deserving than the teams that had the best regular season. So, doesn't affect Arkansas. They're not in the playoff conversation. We're out of time today, but I did have some thoughts on Arkansas and how a 12-team playoff might have affected them in the past. We'll get to that another day this week. We appreciate you being here. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Kyle May, who is the executive director of the Arkansas Edge NIL, will be at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club tomorrow, and we will play that interview for you on our podcast tomorrow. Until then, we hope we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.